This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome. Welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Yehi Swuhib in Washington. Coming up on Africa News Tonight.
Specifically, this report recommends that this process of transferring back to Africa any of the objects that have been looted, borrowed, stolen, whatever, should be given back, and that this whole idea of being given back on loan is not appropriate.
That's reporter Catherine Field talking about a report to be submitted Monday on the proposed return of African art taken illegally from the continent. Details coming up. Also, Zimbabwe announces measures to rescue the country's depreciating currency. And a resolution introduced by Ethiopia, Equatorial Guinea, and Côte d'Ivoire calls for the UN to fund peacekeeping missions led by the AU. We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story, Zimbabwe's finance minister is expected today to present the 2019 budget and announce measures to rescue the country's depreciating currency and prop up the ailing economy. Economists say the government has a huge challenge ahead and any solutions are likely to be painful. The country owes billions of dollars in debt from former President Robert Mugabe's rule. Confidence is weak in the bond notes that replaced the currency when it collapsed several years ago, and there are concerns that the government will wipe the slate clean again, rendering the notes worthless. Shops are running low on goods and gas stations have long lines. Most state-owned companies that provide services such as electricity, water, and transport are failing. Economists are urging privatization, but the government has resisted so far. Economists warn that any reform program that is not focused on fundamentals, with particular focus on the fiscal policy, will be useless. In 2017, the government's domestic debt rose by 70.45% to $6.27 billion, while credit to the private sector stood at $3.71 billion. A new report on the status of African artwork in French museums will urge French President Emmanuel Macron to return the works that were taken without consent from African countries. French historian Benedict Savoy and Senegalese economist and writer Felouine Sarr will present the study to President Macron tomorrow. In the report, they argue that the complete transfer of property back to Africa and not the long-term loan of objects to African museums should be the general rule for artifacts and works that were taken during the colonial period of Africa. Reporter Catherine Field spoke with my colleague Kim Lewis about why French museums and the French Ministry of Culture view the report as radical and strongly oppose the recommendations in it.
It's been written by a French historian and a Senegalese economist and writer. It's 108 pages long, and they will present that to the French president on Friday. Specifically, this report recommends that this process of transferring back to Africa any of the objects that have been looted, borrowed, stolen, whatever, should be given back, and that this whole idea of being given back on loan is not appropriate, but it should be transferred. Now, in particular, the report says that 24 items or groups of objects should be returned immediately, and they've said specifically they should be sent back to Mali, Benin, Nigeria, Senegal, Ethiopia, and Cameroon. Those 24 items is an immediate gesture to show that France is willing and is able to meet good on its promises. And then they suggest that after that, there would be this first phase, which would start in 2019, of a process of returning at least two-thirds of those 90,000 objects that are held in French museums, giving them all back to Africa. On top of that, they are also saying that France has to work through bilateral commissions. That means setting up with each of these countries that say that some of their art was looted. So as they go through what is there, what can be given back, and in what order. This would need a change of legislation in France, which doesn't have any law allowing for such a massive transfer of items from its state museums. But it's certainly on the ground here in France. It's a real, what some people are seeing as a breakthrough in getting the French state to think again about the art which sits in its museums.
French President Macron is expected to face strong opposition from French museums as well as the culture ministry. How is he going to handle this?
That will be interesting to see, because it would be such a big change for France to do this. Certainly, he's made it known when he made that speech just after he came to office last year. He made that very big speech in which he said that it was time for France to either permanently or temporarily return African heritage to the continent. He said it would be a priority during his term in office, so he could well very quickly be held to account for his own promises. It will be interesting to see what he does about that. But again, we've already had from some museums over the last year, particularly here in Paris, the Musée Quai Branly, which has got a lot of African artifacts, they have started saying, yes, it's time for some of these artifacts to go home.
What are some of the artifacts and artwork?
In particular, you're looking at a whole range of artworks. Some of them in particular are from private exhibitions that were there, for example, masks, for example, art. Some of them are really historical assets. So we're looking at royal thrones, statues, swords, these type of objects. One of the other issues that, of course, has always come up and that the museums have said needs to be addressed is that there's nowhere that these collections could be housed in Africa. And now in this particular report, they say that this is really not the way that the country should be looking at it. And they specifically point out that there are now more than 500 museums on the African continent. You've got around 50 museums in countries like Nigeria or South Africa. And in particular, when you look at Benin, they're building three museums and restoring another one. That now is the time to move away from that thinking and to just say, look, these have been in Europe for this length of time. It's now time for them to go back. And in particular, the authors of this report say we are now at a stage where there should be no conditions attached to the restitution.
Will this apply to other countries such as Britain and Germany?
At this stage, no. But there is a sort of, if you like, a movement across Europe, really, most of the European museums, to get involved in something like the Benin Dialogue Group, which has been led by the British Museum in London, to start looking at these initiatives to propose either some sort of long-term loan of objects or the straight-out transfer of objects back to Africa.
That was reporter Catherine Field. She spoke with my colleague Kim Lewis from Paris. A draft resolution introduced this week by the three African countries on the United Nations Security Council could shift peacekeeping responsibilities across the continent to the African Union. The resolution introduced by Ethiopia, Equatorial Guinea, and Côte d'Ivoire calls for the UN on a case-by-case basis to fund peacekeeping missions led by the African Union. The UN currently runs most peacekeeping efforts in Africa with a budget that dwarfs the African Union's. But the AU's peacekeeping role has grown, especially in East Africa, where AMISOM, the AU's mission in Somalia, has fought back back against a violent insurgency for more than a decade. If passed, the resolution would effectively outsource at least some future peacekeeping missions to the African Union, transferring authority and oversight to the Pan-African Organization based in Ethiopia. The resolution has received key backing from France and China, two of the Security Council's five permanent members. But the United States has raised questions about whether a transfer of authority to the AU might raise peacekeeping costs and complicate efforts to oversee potential human rights abuses in conflict zones. Many of the problems that Africa faces can be traced to failures of the rule of law and the increasing gap between rich and poor, with new economic opportunities for the poor. The situation fuels conflict, human rights abuses, and the feeling of hopelessness that motivates many to make the dangerous journey to Europe for jobs and a better life. Graca Machel, widow of South African President Nelson Mandela and Mozambican President Samora Machel, says most of the laws to improve the continent's prospects are already in place. They just need to be enforced and strengthened. She spoke with my colleague Paul Alexander about the need for leaders to follow through on their commitments to make life better for their people.
So some say the rule of law has yet to be fully embraced by African leaders, who they say have yet to strengthen institutions to ensure a pragmatic approach to the functionality of the rule of law by all citizens.
I would agree with that, yes. I do agree. Particularly if I have to say the strengthening of the judiciary and its independence so that it can apply all the principles of constitutionality, of ethics to justice by all citizens, and in a dynamic way, they are much more responsive to the needs, to the cases, and also to the diversity of society. Because if I want to say on the judiciary, for instance, you'll find that women, they hardly get cases, I mean, dealt with by judiciary in a satisfactory way. Processes are too long, processes are dropped, and it is very few women who manage, I mean, to get access to court. So the judiciary, for instance, it is definitely an area where most, there I can say, most of African countries have to transform. You have also cases of, again, I don't have the numbers, of the parliament, which are rubber-stamping decisions of government. And you would say the separation of powers needs to be strengthened so that parliament exercises the mandate they have in an independent way, but in a dynamic way, where they can oversight the government. But in our case, we need parliaments and parliamentarians also to educate people. It's not only to oversight government, but in their relationship with their constituencies, to educate people on how exactly society functions, including in issues of the rule of law.
So what measures do you think African leaders need to implement to engender sustainable economic development for their people?
I think mostly is implementation of what they say. You'll hardly find a government in Africa which has not, I mean, policies of what should be done. The major question is the how, and also the pace in which economic initiatives are implemented to respond to the pace of demand by society. So measures, if you ask me what measures should be taken, it's it's mostly to make it work. Let me put it as simple as such. Policies are in place, but they have to be made to work in a dynamic way, in an inclusive way, in which the rural is involved, the women are involved, young people are involved, unions are involved. It's not only the business. And actually, even the relationship between government and business still need to be strengthened to adopt a kind of a national compact in which, yes, private sector is independent. The private sector chooses where to participate, but fulfilling a national compact in which the deliverables which are coming from private sector respond to the priorities and the strategic issues which have to be addressed for a country to progress economically.
That was Graca Machel, widow of South African President Nelson Mandela, speaking with VOA's Paul Alexander. You're listening to Africa News Tonight, live on the following frequencies, 15580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Yehi Swuhib in Washington. Past the hour, here's a recap of our top stories. Zimbabwe announces measures to rescue the country's depreciating currency. A new report urges French President Emmanuel Macron to return African artworks that were taken without consent from the continent. And a resolution introduced by Ethiopia, Equatorial Guinea, and Cote d'Ivoire calls for the UN to fund peacekeeping missions led by the African Union. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com. South Africa wants to reform its land holdings, and the economic upside of doing it successfully could be significant. Getting more land into the hands of black farmers could increase incomes for thousands of families. But there are risks. Reform done badly could set the economy back for years. In this segment of our series on South Africa's land restitution process, Darren Taylor reports on its potential financial impact.
Some economists warn that South Africa's economy could implode if the government abruptly takes white farmers' land to redistribute. They say it could trigger the collapse of the rand and a dramatic decrease in food production. Azar Jamin is head of the economic consulting firm Econometrics. He says the mere announcement that the ruling African National Congress wanted to take white-owned land killed off a nascent economic recovery by scaring off both domestic and foreign investment.
The acrimony surrounding the whole issue, which has involved a lot of emotions, has done a lot of damage to business and consumer confidence. Some would say it's even led to some emigration of skilled people from the country.
Land prices have decreased 30% since the start of the year, when the ANC said it would turn to expropriating land without compensation if needed. Professor Ferdi Meyer is the director of the country's Bureau for Food and Agricultural Policy. He says equity in land possession must happen, given that white farmers still control more than 70% of the best commercial farmland. But, he says, the ANC's announcement couldn't have come at a worse time, with unemployment approaching 30%, a recession battering the country, and tax revenue at an all-time low.
In this period where we want to do the land reform, we need to acknowledge that the profit margins and agriculture margins are under pressure. Money has run out, government finances are tight, and
Mayor points out that farming is still suffering the aftermath of a drought, the listeria disease that infected certain meat products, and low grain prices. He says those problems must be considered as the government looks for ways to help more black South Africans become commercial farmers. Mayor says the long list of hardships white farmers face, including the possibility that they'll lose their land, means they're not investing as much in their businesses as they should. He notes one table grape farm he has studied where the owner is not planting new vines.
The potential loss over the next 10 years, 40% drop in exports, 30% drop in employment. That's the type of reality that we're facing if we stop investment in the farm. So that's why we need to get it right. We need to get the policies right and incentives right to avoid this. We need to have a sustainable food system based on a fair and just land reform model.
Jamin says that outcome is within relatively easy reach. A good starting point for the government, he says, would be to grant title deeds to the estimated 20 million smallhold and subsistence farmers. The state and various tribal councils currently own the land these farmers work. That means they can't use the land title as collateral for loans for seed and equipment.
If one were to unleash the ability to hold title within so many millions of people, you could suddenly see a dramatic unraveling of wealth in South Africa that could see the economy booming strongly.
As yet, there's no land reform proposal before Parliament. President Cyril Ramaphosa has assured local and international business leaders the government's plan will respect property rights. Even so, the possibility of expropriating land without paying white owners remains on the table. That disconnect, says Jamin, does nothing but harm to South Africa's efforts to attract new investment. I'm Darren Taylor for VOA News in Johannesburg.
An attack today on a French company's water drilling site in southeastern Niger has left 8 people dead. There was no immediate claim of responsibility, but suspicion fell on Boko Haram extremists who operate in the area. The company Foraco said gunmen opened fire on sleeping workers in the village of Tumor. It says that in addition to the dead, 5 other workers were injured. And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. For listeners on VOA's Nairobi FM station, please stay tuned for the Swahili Evening News coming up at 16:30 UTC. For all other listeners, please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports. Tune in again at 1800 UTC for another edition of Africa News Tonight. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Skip Sisk, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.
Hello, I'm Douglas Impoga, host of VOA's Reporters Roundtable. Join us every Thursday as we discuss important African topics and events. I'll have a panel of African journalists and expert guests to discuss the topic at hand. We take a deeper look at important African news topics. That's Reporters Roundtable every Thursday at 17:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
Hello, I'm Rick Pantaleo. Coming up on the science edition of Press Conference USA, Dr. Amesh Adalja, MD from the Johns Hopkins Center for Health Security, joins me and my co-host, VOA health reporter Carol Pearson, to talk about what many regard as the deadliest flu pandemic in history. Listen this Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
The 2019 Voice of America calendars are in. This year's calendar features a variety of scenic photos that capture the beautiful byways of the United States, including magnificent photos of California's Big Sur Coast Highway, West Virginia's Highland Scenic Highway, and even the Cato All-American Road in Maine. Tune into Border Crossings and call to request a free calendar.
Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning in to the Sunny Side of Sports, Monday through Friday at 1630 and 1830 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/sunny. It's the Sunny Side of Sports right here on the Voice of America.
Hello, this is Peter Clotty, host of Nightline Africa. Please join us every Saturday and Sunday at 16 and 18 hours UTC. Nightline Africa is VOA's Africa's weekend show that provides news, features, and entertainment news about Africa and the world. Tune in, you will be glad you did. I guarantee it.